evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
We strongly condemn tendencies by some powerful countries who preach peace, human rights and democracy, and yet clandestinely fund conflicts and the unconstitutional change of governments for their own narrow interests.
That's Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa, one of several African leaders at the UN General Assembly this past week, who said the UN has not moved quickly enough to embrace change.
Some of the elements that we capture from that Farmer Voice survey is really amazing. When we say that we need to produce 50% more food and feed while in 20% less land per capita that we do today, but for the farmers, is impacting their yields, it's impacting their production, it's impacting their ability to produce food and feed.
A recent survey finds that 76% of farmers in Africa are worried about the future impact of climate change, while others say it has already had an impact on their farms and incomes. And residents in areas surrounding Malawi's Kasangu National Park criticized two wildlife organizations for allegedly enabling deadly elephant incursions. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Morocco's earthquake damaged almost 3,000 villages in the High Atlas Mountains, with a total population of 2.8 million people. The minister in charge of the budget told Reuters on Friday. The 6.8 magnitude earthquake that struck on September 8th killed more than 2,900 people, most of them in hard-to-reach mountain areas. Reuters reports the minister, Fawzi Lekja, said in a presentation at Parliament that at least nearly 60,000 houses were damaged, of which 32% have totally collapsed. The government would offer 2,500 dirhams, or about $244 monthly over a year, in aid to quake-stricken households, in addition to 140,000 dirhams compensation paid for totally destroyed homes and 80,000 for partially damaged ones. Also, reconstruction should respect the original architectural character of the High Atlas Mountains, Alekja said. The earthquake, Morocco's deadliest since 1960, destroyed many hamlets with traditional mud brick, stone, and rough wood houses specific to the Amazigh-speaking Atlas Mountains. The quake-stricken regions are among Morocco's poorest, with many remote villages lacking proper roads and public services. Several African leaders blasted the West at the United Nations General Assembly this past week, saying although this year's theme was about rebuilding trust and creating transparency, the UN has not moved quickly enough to embrace change. VOA's Caravan Dam has more.
Many African leaders say the United Nations is not democratic enough and say they want the African Union to have a permanent seat on the UN Security Council because decisions are being made there that affect Africa. African leaders also called on the UN to find a speedy resolution to the conflict in Ukraine because it impacts supply chain issues in Africa, especially much-needed grain and fertilizer that used to come from Ukraine but were cut off after Russia's invasion. They also called on leaders to address climate change. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres strongly agreed, pointing out that developing countries bear the brunt of the effects of a warming planet but are some of the world's smallest polluters.
People crushed under the grinding wheels of poverty, people starving in a world of plenty, children denied a seat in a classroom, families fleeing conflict, seeking a better life, parents watching helplessly as their children die of preventable disease.
Libya's Minister of Youth, Fatala Af al-Zouni, addressed the assembly a week and a half after what many weather experts say were climate change-induced floods devastating the coastal city of Derna. He appealed for the world to live up to its responsibility to Libya to help with the aftermath of the disaster.
أهيب بالعالم أن يتحمل مسؤولياته تجاه ليبيا.
El-Zouni also said it's necessary to hold free elections in Libya, a country that's been mired in civil war and political instability for years. In his speech to the UN, Guinea's junta leader and interim president, Mamadi Bouya, who led a coup against President Alpha Condé 2 years ago, denounced the West's criticism of a wave of coups on the continent.
L'Afrique souffre, mesdames et messieurs. Elle souffre d'un modèle de gouvernance.
Bouya says African nations suffer from a governance model that was imposed on them. He says that model was good for the West, but fails to adapt to what he calls our reality, our customs. Over the past few years, coups have occurred in Burkina Faso, Chad, Gabon, Mali, Niger, and Sudan. Also speaking this week was Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who said Western nations acted to maintain their own interests.
We strongly condemn tendencies by some powerful countries who preach peace, human rights, and democracy, and yet clandestinely fund conflicts and the unconstitutional change of governments for their own narrow interests. We further condemn the use of unilateral and illegal sanctions as a foreign policy tool at the disposal of some powerful nations.
The general debate of the 78th session of the UN General Assembly at the UN headquarters in New York wraps up next week. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
World leaders are gathered this week for the United Nations General Assembly. Many took the opportunity to meet with business leaders to encourage international investment. Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu was among them. VOA's Anthony Labruto reports from Washington.
While in New York for the United Nations General Assembly debate, Nigerian President Bola Tinubu made a stop at the NASDAQ Stock Exchange Wednesday and rang the closing bell. "I'm happy to bring Nigeria to your doorsteps and honored that we are here today with a bubbly market," Tinubu said. He had presented his speech before the General Assembly a day earlier. Tinubu took the opportunity to promote investment in his country, declaring Nigeria the greatest economy, where investors can make investments confidently and without fear. "We've removed a lot of bottlenecks. We've cleared the oil subsidy that is corrupt. And we have also, you know, retooled the exchange rate to a reliable, dependable, one figure of floating exchange naira," Tinubu said. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Africa Business Center sponsored the event.
A prominent peace forum in Ethiopia has been postponed. According to the Associated Press, the Turner High-Level Forum on Security in Africa says the annual gathering of African leaders set for October has been pushed back to April of next year due to unforeseen circumstances. The forum takes place in Ethiopia's Amhara region, which has experienced months of clashes as the federal government tries to disarm local fighters who had been its allies in a recent two-year conflict in the neighboring Tigray region. Ethiopia announced a state of emergency in the Amhara region last month. To find out more about the postponement of the peace forum and the situation in Amhara, I reached journalist Samuel Getachew.
Well, they're postponed because much of the nation, including the Amhara region where this is going to be, was supposed to be held in Bahardar, which is the capital of Addis Ababa, is in a conflict between the Ethiopian government and a Fano militant group, which is a group that claims to fight for the interest of Amharas. So it's because of the conflict that's been going on, and much of the country, as you know, is still going through endless conflicts. As the end of the Tigray conflict begins, the Amhara conflict has taken over a good part of the country.
Wouldn't it have been a good idea to hold the forum to solve some of these conflicts, especially in the Amhara region?
Well, you know, how do you hold an international event when you're inviting heads of state along with your partners, funders, donors, who do come to Bahardar to discuss some of the priorities of this African nations, not just Ethiopia, but much of the African continent? And the conflict is really, really affecting so many people, and Amhara region, especially Bahardar, the capital, is no exception. And much of the international investment are even leaving Bahar Dar because of the conflicts, and much of the investors being from Holland, flower growers from Holland.
The Tana Forum describes itself as a platform for African-led solutions to the continent's most pressing security challenges. Now, given that the federal government and fighters from the Amhara region continue to destabilize the region, is there anything that can be done in the meantime?
You know, the Ethiopian government is promising to end this conflict. Ethiopia is a country that has always been defined by foreign aid, an aid-dependent nation. But it was beginning to move from that image of the famine victims that the world has become, has Ethiopia has become known as. But investments, unless you end endless conflict, investments won't come to Ethiopia. You can talk about peace in a five-star hotel in Bahar Dar, but unless you really push the end of conflict and unless there's peace in this country, no investments will come. No international investments, international conferences will happen to this country. And the loss of Tana, the idea of postponing Tana, is really a big problem to Ethiopia, because Ethiopia has become a hub for international events. And even April next year is a planned event. It might not go on unless the Ethiopian government ends conflicts in this country. And the Amhara region is no exception. But again, conflicts are happening everywhere in this country, not just in Amhara and in Afar, but in places like near the Sudan border, where many, many victims are being, you know, millions of people are being displaced as a result. And it's really becoming a problem to this government, the Ethiopian government in Addis Ababa.
Do you think the government in Addis Ababa is doing enough to solve some of these conflicts, as you say, because they affect the status of Ethiopia being the headquarters of the African Union and a country that depends on stability to thrive?
I think the government wants to end conflicts because it's not in the interest of the government to really have endless conflicts across the country. But again, it depends on the kind of resources. I mean, the question that needs to be asked is, does Ethiopia have enough resources to really end this conflict and kickstart its economy? At the moment, I mean, the conflict in Tigray has really destroyed the national economy of this country. And Amhara region has lost more than $45 million as of last month because of the latest conflict in Amhara. Thousands of people are being displaced. You know, the taxpayers, the people that pay the taxes, their numbers are dwindling. And again, the government might want to end conflict, might want to move forward. The question that needs to be asked is, does the country, a country like Ethiopia, has the ability to really, you know, bring peace and kickstart the economy? At the moment, you know, all the numbers indicate to me that's not happening at any moment. And that's really is scary to many of us, because what happens in Ethiopia really affects neighboring countries.
That's freelance journalist Samuel Getachew. He spoke with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. A recent survey conducted by life science company Bayer interviewed 800 farmers in 8 countries, including Kenya, finding that 76% of farmers are worried about the future impact of climate change, while 71% said it has already had an impact on their farms and incomes. Muhammad Yusuf reports.
The Farmer Voice survey, supported by Germany-based Bayer Group, interviewed 800 farmers in 8 different countries on all 6 continents. Researchers say 568 farmers have witnessed the impact of climate change directly on their farms. Of the farmers from Australia, Brazil, China, Germany, India, Kenya, Ukraine and the United States, 80% have experienced heat effects and anticipate reduced yields in the coming years. Rodrigo Santos is the president of the Crop Science Division at Bayer. He says despite the impact of climate change on farming communities, there will be more demand for food harvested from less land in the coming years.
Some of the elements that we capture from that Farmer Voice survey is really amazing. When we say that we need to produce 50% more food and feed while in 20% less land per capita than we do today, and also dealing with some of the impact of the climate change. Because climate change for us, when we live in the cities, is one thing, but for the farmers, is impacting their yields, it's impacting their production, it's impacting their ability to produce food and feed.
Kenya is one of the countries mentioned in the 20-page report, and it said that 73% of farmers have faced drought. The persistent droughts in the East African nation have resulted in crop losses and livestock deaths. The report highlights that one in every six farmers have suffered a nearly 16% loss of income due to adverse weather conditions over the past 2 years. Unpredictable weather patterns and insufficient seed varieties have exacerbated food insecurity in Africa, according to experts. The head of Africa Agribusiness International Finance Corporation at the World Bank, Yusuke Kotsuji, said the continent needs to adopt new farm technologies faster.
Now it's really the headache is like how to scale, no? And then technology dissemination. And the challenge is like agri-tech dissemination is not as simple as mobile phone penetrated Africa, or now people are using smartphone, because like there's like a bit of a microclimate, no? Because Doa and I can farm next door, but we can get quite different result and devils is in detail.
According to experts, older African farmers encounter difficulties when it comes to embracing technologies, unlike their younger counterparts on the continent. Most farmers surveyed mentioned that they either currently implement or plan to adopt methods that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Additionally, over 50% of them are striving to enhance biodiversity. Dawa Abdel Motal, a senior counselor at the World Trade Organization, says there is a need to facilitate the easy movement of food in different countries to fight food insecurity.
We also need to take into account the fact that the climate crisis is progressing and there will be more climate calamities, unfortunately, in different parts of the globe. So allowing food to move from country A to country B to counter those calamities so that countries don't starve is absolutely essential. I always like to say where countries find themselves on the map is no more than an accident of geography. There are some countries that are completely dependent on imported food for their food security.
Farmers in their ongoing battle against climate change worry about escalating fertilizer costs, energy prices, and fluctuation in prices and income. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Residents in areas surrounding Malawi's Kasungu National Park are criticizing two wildlife organizations for allegedly enabling deadly elephant incursions. Last year, the two organizations funded the relocation of 250 elephants to restock the partly fenced park, despite protests. The lack of fencing has allowed the elephants to roam outside the park, causing mayhem and civilian deaths. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
Villagers in the areas of Ntunduwala and Chulu says the elephants have destroyed hundreds of hectares of crops and killed six people, the most recent death on September 16. Poster Nigeria is a father-in-law of a 32-year-old woman, Masie Piri, who the elephants killed this year at the Chifwamba village in the Chulu area. Jere says he's struggling to care for Piri's five children. Her husband fled the village soon after the elephant killed his wife. He says, "I'm too old to take care of these children because the breadwinner is the one who was killed by the elephant. I can't buy food or pay for their school fees. And another problem is the elephants have also destroyed our crops." He also said the roaming elephants made farmers abandon cultivating in the nearby Chiwoza Irrigation Scheme. The African Parks Organization and the International Fund for Animal Welfare relocated 250 elephants to Kasungu National Park in the central Malawi in June of 2022. Poaching had depleted the park's elephant population. However, the organizations declined requests from the community to finish erecting the 110-kilometer fence that would keep the animals away from people and their crops before bringing in the elephants. Patricia Ndadzela is the representative of IFO in Malawi and Zambia. He says work is in progress to fence the remaining part of the park.
When we are translocating these animals, we had done 40 kilometers of fence. As I'm saying, we are talking of a 90-kilometer fence now.
And at the end of next year, we'll have done 110 kilometers of fence.
Incidents of elephants killing people are not unique to Malawi. An IFO report concludes around 400 people die each year from conflict with elephants in India. The report also says about 200 people were killed by elephants in Kenya between 2010 and 2017. Nadzela says the human wildlife conflict at Kasungu National Park is largely because people there ignore warnings to avoid conflict with the elephants.
We had an incident where one of the community members basically was following the elephant. And so that had come out to a level where somebody wanted to touch the tail of the elephant. Those kind of dangerous sort of attitudes is something that should have been avoided.
Nadzela added that the communities grow their crops very close to the national park boundary, which makes it easier for the elephants to destroy the crops. In the meantime, the bereaved families and owners of the destroyed crops near Kasungu National Park are asking the Malawi government to compensate them. Malawian Minister of Tourism, Vera Kantukule, told VOA that the existing wildlife legislation does not provide compensation for people attacked by wild animals.
So what we're doing now is we're working very closely with our counterparts in the Ministry of Justice, but also the Law Commission, to see how we can review the Wildlife Act, maybe to ensure that we are incorporating issues of compensation.
Kantukule said the government has increased the number of game rangers to help keep the elephants away from people living near the parks. Lamik Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Gunmen killed 9 people when they opened fire on a bus in a northern Ghana district struggling with ethnic tensions and concerns over Islamist violence from across the border in Burkina Faso, a local official told the French news agency AFP on Friday. The attack on Thursday morning targeted a bus carrying mostly women on their way to a local market and escorted by police because of the tensions in Pusiga district near the volatile Bauku area of Ghana's Upper East Region. Pusiga District Chief Zubeiru Abdullahi, a local mayor, told AFP that the 9 victims died from gunshot wounds when their bus was ambushed near a remote forest close to the border with both Burkina Faso and Togo. Upper East Region has struggled with a decades-long conflict between ethnic Kusasi and Mamperusi communities over the right to choose a new chieftain and over land rights in the mostly Muslim Bauku region, where there is a heavy police and army presence. Jihadist violence in Burkina Faso has also forced people to flee across the frontier into Ghana. Earlier this year, Ghana sent 1,000 more troops and police to Bauku to reinforce security after gunmen killed an immigration officer and wounded 2 more. Officials did not blame any group for that attack. AFP says Ghana's northern frontier is also an area with well-established smuggling routes, porous borders, and illegal gold mining, a combination local officials and experts worry could benefit jihadists. With Islamist militants controlling large parts of Burkina Faso over the border, Western partners are looking to help Ghana and coastal Western African neighbors Togo, Benin, and Ivory Coast strengthen their defenses to prevent jihadist attacks. Johannesburg, South Africa's most popular city, has for years struggled to keep up with housing demand due to an influx of people who come in search of opportunities. Some residents, many with little financial means, find themselves in subpar housing that has a high risk of fire and little to no access to water and electricity. Jan Bowman reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
More than 70 people died in late August in a fire that engulfed a so-called hijacked building, a dwelling left vacant and neglected in the 1990s, when businesses left Johannesburg's inner city for the affluent suburbs. Housing officials say crime syndicates soon took over the dwellings, sometimes with fraudulent housing deeds they used to collect rent from unsuspecting residents, who either pay or are pushed out. According to government statistics, thousands live in such buildings across the city, with little access to clean drinking water, electricity, and plumbing amid an affordable housing crisis. While criminal syndicates are often linked to hijacked buildings, the situation is sometimes more complicated. In some cases, legal ownership of the housing is in question. Inner city resident Lizwelethu Ndlovu and his neighbors have been waiting for the courts to rule on a years-long dispute over the ownership of the building they live in. In the meantime, court has ordered a hold on rent payments, although residents must continue to pay for services while a final judgment is pending.
Because we have got more than two people claiming to own the place, we have to put the money together as a community and buy whatever it has to be bought. And we fix some of things like plumbing, we do ourselves. Cleaning, we do ourselves. While we wait for the courts.
The city of Johannesburg says it has intervened in recent years to address the challenge of hijacked buildings and plans to acquire buildings whose owners are not traceable. But for Freda Mutswane, who lives in an unlawfully occupied building believed to be owned by the city, political promises feel empty. Residents there say they have been without running water since May 2022 and must rely on a fire hydrant for their water needs.
But since from last year, after we got the problem of water, since then they never come and fix anything. They keep on promising us.
Experts say that a housing crisis lies behind the substandard living conditions. Thuvel Helm Solomon is a senior lecturer in anthropology at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg.
Well, these spaces in which thousands of inner city residents are living emerge out of an urban housing crisis. And so many low-income households are forced to live either in very poor conditions or unlawfully. And criminality and exploitation arises out of that.
Sifiso Zuma is a treasurer for the Inner City Federation, a coalition of tenants and unlawful occupiers. He says politicians aren't listening to their pleas for help.
If you want to go to their office, they are not going to allow you to go and talk to them. But if there's a strategy like this one, it's where you are going to see them. Then after this is done.
In the aftermath of the devastating August fire, a city spokesperson says city, provincial and national officials have been meeting to address the housing crisis and find a way to improve the living conditions of inner city residents. Jan Borman, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And it's now time for our Saturday Music Spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Choose your partner if you please. Mo Shaku Shaku. moment. Ready? Here we go. Here we go.
Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Left hand swinging if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Right hand swinging if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Left hand swinging if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Right hand swinging if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Belly to belly if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Belly to belly if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Back to back if you please.
I'm all shackle shack.
Back to back.
Can't be a comfort, but I'm a chance to sound okay.
for this Abi dance. So why they do this song? To teach you the basic step. I say make you not be fear. Run to the dance floor. Just do as I do and we go have a lot of fun. So jump to the center, move one leg like this.
Dallas somebody baby zuru eh 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 send you
kermo sarantina genye jana ta motamo tenela bergone pinyi orere tsare genye agul na kanile to yena rakshmerto kesento takitore onne bocna dangada saboyo tore kukulu genan saini untore akuku akuku chiga 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 rayo chiga 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 kwayo enogada 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 tayo enogada 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 tayo hitota mutoro dapo takitoro asaboyo
beat me, kick me, slap me. I don't even care, cause that is true love. You can diss me, slap me, beat me. I'll never mind, cause that is love.
That was our Saturday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music. Nailand Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America, from our producer David Vande and the rest of the Nailand team. I thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga.